It's Chris-a-mania, brother.
That's a great question. Look at you, man, with the powerful questions.
Woo!
This is the Chris Van Vliet Show. Chris Van Vliet Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, Chris Van Vliet!
What is going on, my friends? Thanks for hanging out. Happy Thanksgiving. As this, this is dropping on Thanksgiving, so whenever you're listening to this, it's either a happy belated Thanksgiving or like a really early happy Thanksgiving to you. How can you not love Santino Marella? People ask me all the time, Chris, how do you get your interviews? And this one's kind of interesting. I've been wanting to do an interview with Santino for a while because I think he's a fascinating guy. I think his character work is seriously second to none. He also lives like 30-ish minutes from where I grew up. So we got that in common there, being a Canadian. And so when I did the interview with Tennille Dashwood, a.k.a. Emma, last month, she talked about her partnership with Santino. So I tagged him in the tweet talking about that interview. He then started following me on Twitter. So I saw my opening, boom, went in. I DM'd him, and I heard nothing back. And then I remembered that Aaron Stevens, better known as Damien Sandow, actually trained with Santino at his gym in Mississauga, Ontario. So since Sandow was on the show, I reached out to Sandow. I said, hey, can you connect me with Santino? Boom, he made it happen. We were both at the big event in New York a few weekends ago where we made this interview happen in my hotel room. It's such a great chat. I really enjoyed this. I know you will too, with Santino Marella. Although he doesn't sound like that at all. In fact, at no point during this interview does he speak in that kind of accent. Keep those reviews coming in on Apple Podcasts. Thank you so much. They're seriously the most helpful thing you can do to support the show. CMFT1869 says, this is the best podcast around. 5-star rating here. I've only been listening for a few weeks, but I am hooked. Guests equal awesome. Stories equal awesome. Chris Van Vliet equals awesome. That's the review there. Thank you so much, my friend. Appreciate that. Keep those reviews coming in. I'm going to keep reading one on the show. So you can be part of the show by leaving a review on either your iPhone or on iTunes. Thank you to Samson for the mics and the audio equipment that make us sound so good on the show. If you're looking to start a podcast or a YouTube channel, audio is seriously the most important thing. Even if it's a YouTube channel, audio is the most important thing. Head to samsontech.com. You can see their full lineup, and it is so much cheaper than you think. The mics that I use are $80. Yeah, you don't have to spend hundreds of dollars. $80. Also, thank you to Green Roads for supporting the show. And I know you hear a lot about CBD products, a lot of CBD companies popping up out of everywhere. They're flooding my Instagram feed. But if you're going to get into trying CBD products, go with Green Roads. They're a pharmacist-founded company that have the lab results to back up their claims. A lot of CBD companies don't even have CBD in their products. How crazy is that? It's wild. The benefits are really wide-ranging with CBD products. But for me, it's been, it's about like relaxing. It's about like calming my brain when I've got 70 things on the go. And it's also about recovery from the gym. And Green Roads products have really changed my life since I started taking them about a year ago. Use my code Chris15. You'll get 15% off your order at greenroadsworld.com. That's Chris15 for 15% off at greenroadsworld.com. Since this is dropping on Thanksgiving, I just want to give a big thank you to you. I'm thankful to you for making this whole thing possible. I mean, putting these interviews on YouTube, now putting these YouTube interviews into the podcast, I mean, it's completely changed my life. And it's all because of you. Because otherwise, I'd just be sitting here in my spare bedroom talking into a mic all by myself. I say it all the time, but it's crazy. I'm actually kneeling up against my bed. My mic stand is sitting on my bed right now. I'm wearing my Samson headphones, and I'm talking in here to myself. I don't know if my girlfriend can hear me down the hall. Can you hear me, honey? Okay, she can't hear me. So yeah, it's just me and you in here. So thank you for making this possible. I'm super thankful and grateful to you. And we're going to keep this going, man. You know, the goal in 2019 was 50 wrestling interviews. I counted the other day and I've uploaded 91 videos. So we absolutely crushed that goal, which means 2020 is going to be a massive year. Whew. Can't wait for it. So Santino Marella, when I started doing the research for this interview, I was blown away and a little surprised that Santino had been with WWE for 11 years, if you include his time in developmental. I think a lot of people remember the Cobra and the funny storylines, which are very good, but I don't think anyone does comedy wrestling quite like Santino. I mean, he's great at it, but if you look at his accolades, it's such an impressive career before he was forced to retire because of that neck injury. Intercontinental champion twice. Tag team champion once with Vladimir Kozlov. United States champion once. And of course, he won the Miss WrestleMania Battle Royal as Santina. We talk about Santina. We talk about how that all came together and why he was okay with doing stuff like that. His attitude's basically like, you're given a character to play. You're given this role. Go out there and do it. So this is such a good chat. Please put your hands together, my friends, for Santino Marella. Thank you so much for making this happen.
Oh, my pleasure. Absolutely. It's a busy day down there, but we can find some time.
Two Canadians just hanging out here.
Yeah. Pickering. Pickering is like the parallel dimension to Mississauga.
Yeah, so I'm from Pickering, you're from Mississauga. We're like equal distances away from Toronto.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So to our west, we have Oakville. To your west, you have Ajax.
That's right. Wow, yeah.
Yeah, we're actually very similar.
And now you're still living up there.
Yeah, when I retired, I made Mississauga my permanent residence, and it was nice to be home, man. It was interesting to kind of return home. Just to return home, really, you know what I mean? But I was gonna say with a hero's welcome, but you know, because all my friends in Mississauga, they knew what I was doing and they were following and they were, you know, proud of the fact that I was on the road representing Mississauga. So to come home and open up my business after all that, it was kind of like a little bit of a homecoming.
Sure.
That's what I meant.
And your business is still, you know, kind of in the industry.
Yeah, we do. One piece of the pie is pro wrestling. So we're still producing, excellent talent. The kids that come through there are incredible athletes. But then we also focus on, you know, sports, combative sports, Olympic sports. I coach judo. We also do amateur wrestling and boxing. Those are our Olympic kind of sports. And now we do MMA, and we actually got some guys fighting for some titles.
Wow.
At the end of this month. So it's a lot. And of course, we have the Don Koloff Arena where we put on our shows. And we just started something called the Battle Arts Fight League. We're going to have some amateur MMA as well as boxing and kickboxing and stuff. So it's a lot. It's a big undertaking, but it is rewarding.
But this is your background, though, like MMA and, you know, combat sports. That was your background before wrestling.
Judo, yeah. Judo. I mean, I had one MMA fight, but I did not train in MMA. I just jumped in one time without training for it. But no, I was a judo athlete. I represented Ontario, represented Canada, right through university. I participated in judo and was on the national team, and that's really my first love in terms of if I could do anything I wanted to do, it'd be judo. And I'm coaching, yeah.
You know how many people are watching this right now going, he doesn't have the accent?
Yeah. Well, these days, there's enough footage out there. People can see me doing interviews. I work on Sportsnet, so Aftermath. Yeah. So Canadians know Santa Claus is not real. And then from time to time, I still do get a lot of comments when something happens. People are like, it's freaking me out without the accent. But there's some stuff I did, even with WWE, or when Renee came to Battle Arts and did the Where Are They Now. There's a lot of people that, you know, realize this.
Oh, there's still going to be comments on this video. People going, oh, I didn't realize you didn't have that accent.
Yeah, the accent it was an interesting accent. It kind of evolved over the years. There was a little Borat, a little Nacho Libre, a little Italian, like one of my uncle and stuff. So it was pretty interesting. Growing up in Canada, in Mississauga, almost all of my friends were first generation Canadians.
Same, yeah.
Yeah, your parents immigrated from Holland?
My mom,
Netherlands?
My mom actually moved from Greece.
Oh, wow.
My mom's Macedonian, was born in Greece, came over when she was 4. The other side of the family has been in North America for a long time, but I agree with you. Almost all my friends, their parents were born in Italy or their grandparents were born in Italy, Greece, wherever.
Yeah, and I look at there's a definite pattern. I was looking at my elementary school pictures, and it's Poland, Malta, Greek, not too many Greeks because I went to Catholic school and they're Orthodox, but Italian, mm-hmm. Portuguese, mm-hmm. and just repeats, you know, Italian, Portuguese, Greek, Maltese, Italian,
right,
Portuguese.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was interesting.
So was this an accent that you had like heard growing up?
Well, that's the thing. So it's actually a combination of all my friends' parents, Croatian, Slovenian. My neighbor, Ivan, is where I got son of a gun from. Ivan says son of a gun. And, you know, all our parents kind of butchered the language or had a funny expression that I just, and my friends would call me out on it. They're like, you're making a living off making fun of our parents. or copying our parents.
When you go, like, we're at a convention here, the big event in New York. When you're at a convention like this, do people go, hey, man, can you do the accent for me?
Yeah, I don't do the accent. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, well, once I've started a conversation, being me, it's kind of hard to do it. So actually, here's a funny story. Kofi Kingston, when he first started, and he was Jamaican,
yeah.
He had the accent. Yeah, so yeah. We were the only two guys at the time that were speaking on television in a way that we don't speak in real life. So when I would do interviews like with radio stations with WWE, there's a liaison between the two, and he would say, okay, hold on, hey Santino, you're on the line with Joe from 102.5, and then I would immediately be in character the whole time.
Yeah.
But the WWE magazine, they have your direct number, so they will call you, hey Santino, it's Josh from the magazine, could I do an interview with you, and can you be in character? But I've already started the conversation.
Yeah.
So I remember one time Kofi's like, hey, can I ask you a question? He goes, when the magazine calls you, do you use your accent? And I was like, I know, it's so awkward. But once I start talking with somebody, I don't like to do the accent.
I think that your run in WWE, it's a fascinating run, because you came in and won the Intercontinental Championship in your debut match. I don't know if that's ever happened before.
At the time, no. There have been people that won titles on their first. I think Carlito won the US, the Intercontinental, maybe, on his debut, but he wasn't from the audience.
Right.
So if you want, you have to break it down. And his first WWE match, I was the only audience member to come in and win the title. Yeah.
Where did the transition happen from? Like, you had this character at first of being like the badass, you know, guy who could legitimately win a fight, to kind of transitioning into the comedy character. Where did that happen and how did it happen?
Yeah, it was crazy. So I was driving to Elizabethtown, Kentucky. I was I had gotten signed in August of 06, and then I had to go home for a few months to get the visa papers and everything. Right. So now I returned, I believe, November of 06. And then I was in developmental, like everybody else, and we were doing all our live events. And then this is April of 07. So we went home for the holidays, came back, and I'm driving to Elizabethtown, Kentucky. I get a phone call, and it was by Mike Bucci, who was Nova with ECW. Mm-hmm. And he knew that my background, my dad's from Italy, and, you know, Anthony Corelli is my real name. And he just called to see if I could speak Italian. And I was Boris Alexeyev, the Russian fighter guy. And when I used to work downtown Toronto, I worked there for 1 year for a company called New Ad Media. You know the washroom ads?
Yeah.
Yeah, that company.
The things you stare at while you're pissing at a urinal?
Yes, I worked for that company.
Wow.
In event marketing.
Okay.
And so I'd be in rush hour traffic every morning for a year. And I had a cassette, Tourist Italian. I always wanted to speak better Italian. So I would listen to this cassette, just, you know, it would play, click, other side, play, click, and I'd just be on the background. Sometimes I'd pay attention, but it was always playing. So when they called, Mike Bucci called and said, hey, Boris, it's Mike Bucci here. I'm sitting here with some writers. Can you speak Italian? I'm like, yeah, sure. And a month earlier, Dusty Rhodes had called a guy who was playing a character named Fearless Jack Bull and said, Jack Bull, my Dusty impression is not good. Dusty Rhodes, can you ride a motorcycle? And he goes, nope, because he thought someone was ribbing him, because everyone does a Dusty impression, right?
Right.
And he goes, well, can you learn to ride a motorcycle? And he goes, nope. And he's like, okay, well, thank you very much for your time. And then looks at the phone and sees a 203 area code.
Oh, yeah,
and
Connecticut.
Has like a coronary, you know? So they laughed about it. Dusty Rhodes came down to speak to the OVW and said, if anyone ever asks you if you can do anything, the answer is yes. Mm. And then you better learn how to do it. So, can you speak Italian? Ding, dusty in my head. I said, yeah. And they said, well, so can you say some words for us? And I just repeated a couple phrases from this tape that I would listen to. And I believe it was, vorrei un mezzo chilo di formaggio, which means I want a half kilo of cheese. Like the most random expression, you know. And then I said something, my name is Anthony Corelli, where's the hotel, or something like that. And then I could literally see them looking around at each other going, oh, I don't know, it sounded good. Okay, yeah, that's good. We're going to fly you out tomorrow to Italy. And, you know, you might, fingers crossed, you might debut as this Italian guy. It all depends on, you know, things could change last minute. Don't get your hopes up. And
they flew you to Italy for this?
Yeah, I debuted in Milan. So I was on my way to E-Town, Elizabethtown, Kentucky, on a Friday. They had my passport for some reason. Anyway, my passport arrived 8 a.m., got to the airport at noon, landed on a Sunday, and in the middle of a tour, a European tour. And I just kind of, you know, walked around sightseeing in Milan for the day. And then everyone showed up that night, Sunday night, and then Monday was Raw. And I went to Raw, and as soon as I walked through the door with my bags, Arn Anderson was just coming out of the production meeting. And he goes, oh, you're having a good day, kid. You're winning the IC title. And he walks away. I'm like, did he just say I'm winning the IC? What? And that was it. You know, someone came up to me and said, hey, Vince wants to meet you. And meet me. Like, he hasn't even met me yet. And, like, they're going with this. They were getting good feedback with everything I was doing at OVW. And they had enough confidence in me to do this. And I did. Sometimes I watch it back because I have people that haven't seen it. I haven't watched it in a while, the debut moment.
Yeah.
But the acting was good. You know, people thought, Jesus Christ, this guy's out of the audience. And this guy's, you know, in disbelief. And the audience loved it. And that was it. Buckle up. And we were on the road for 8 years straight. Man.
So how did it transition into being like the more comedic role?
Oh, yeah. So originally I was supposed to be this, you know, I'm undersized. I'm 5'10", and the locker room at the time was big guys. There was just really Rey Mysterio at the time. Afterwards, there was, you know, Tyson Kidd and Daniel Bryan, smaller than me, but that's it. I mean, it was a big locker room. So I was going to be this underdog baby face, and the audience, and it's the same thing. This is the same scenario you have today where they don't like to be force fed.
Yeah.
And they don't like to be told this guy is going to be someone you're going to like.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I beat, you know, Umaga, and I beat Chris Masters, and I beat Shelton Benjamin, and everyone's like, come on, man, this guy comes out of the audience and now he's beating everybody just like that. You know, no, we don't want this guy. And they were kind of rejecting the character. And Vince said, well, let's turn him heel. And if that doesn't work, well, repackage or whatever. So I became a heel, and immediately being a heel and complaining but having the accent was comical.
Yeah.
And Vince thought it was hilarious, and I guess they saw something on the mic, and I actually got hurt at the time. I separated my shoulder in a live event. So Vince liked it. So for the next 4 weeks, I couldn't wrestle. I was on the mic every week for 4 weeks. And really, those 4 weeks were what really cemented me as this funny bad guy on the mic. And I was doing guest commentary during matches. And it really took off from there. I made the right person laugh.
Vince. And you did some pretty memorable stuff with Stone Cold. I feel like that really put that character on the radar.
Yeah, that was a measuring stick. And Michael Hayes had a really good analogy. He goes, you've been running the ball upfield, first down. Now we're going to see if you can score a touchdown when you're in there with the big boys.
Wow.
And I was like, wow. And at the end, he just gave me the nod and be like, yep, you did it. So I remember Vince walked by and looked at me. He went like this. Like, you just went up a notch.
Wow.
And I was like, I knew exactly what he meant at that time. And it was a pretty cool moment.
Was there any part of you that was like, I don't want to be this comedy character the whole time?
Well, I'm also, at the time, I was 5'10", and I debuted at 33 years old. So I was kind of defying the odds. I did not want to ruffle any feathers. I was actually, the reason I think I had longevity with the company was because I was grateful from day one. Mm. And yeah, I wanted to be a badass, and I trained to be a badass, and I did work shoots in Japan, and at OVW I was stiff and a lot of judo, and that's what I trained for. But I was also capable of being this comedic character. So it was an honor and a privilege to be Santino. And after a while, it's just what I did, you know.
Was it equally an honor and a privilege to be Santina?
Well, it's funny, oddly enough, as potentially, I mean, there were a lot of family and friends who were like, oh my God, what are they doing? There's no coming back from this once you're dressed like a woman. But it's actually some of my best work in terms of acting, and some of the pre-tapes we did and my reactions and some of the subtleties I did. I really actually was proud of the work we did as Santina. Santina was supposed to be a one-off thing, just at WrestleMania. But it was, people were telling me that in Gorilla, that Vince was pissing his pants laughing. And he loved it so much that it ended up lasting for 3 months.
But what was your initial reaction when you were told you were going to debut as Santina and win this women's match?
Well, when I was first told, I was kind of told it was going to be a one-off thing. So right. I thought, okay, it's going to be funny. Yeah. It's going to be a memorable moment.
It's a good payoff.
It's a WrestleMania moment.
Yeah.
Probably my most significant WrestleMania moment ever, actually. And then, like, the following week, you know, Vince wants the Santina thing again, and Vince wants the Santina thing again. I'm like, oh, man. But you know what? My philosophy has been, you give me lemons and I'm going to make lemonade.
But that's the right attitude to have, because there's a lot of guys where creative gives them something and they're like, well, what are you? I'm not going to do this thing. And then they don't have a job for very long.
Yeah, you cannot walk around with a boo-boo face. And the whole notion of this perceived stock value, I actually downstairs today was talking to Ron Simmons, and we had a talk in the beginning. I guess it was about, not that I was frustrated, but about the comedic character. And he said, look, you can do ha-ha for 10 years, and at the right time, you win one match. Guess what? You're world heavyweight champion.
Yeah.
And I remember like, yeah, thanks, man. You know, so I always had that in the back of my mind where I can... And it happened, you know. For example, the Elimination Chamber, we came a one count away from being the World Heavyweight Champion.
Yeah.
Royal Rumble, we almost had the main event at WrestleMania. So being this comedic character was fine, but you are always that close to winning the big one.
Was the Cobra your idea?
The Cobra was my idea. Well, originally...
I mean, originally, you were just doing... You didn't have the thing on your arm.
Yeah, it was from a bar in Japan. This guy showed me this hand puppet transformation thing where he chopped his hand and made it this thing. And literally, like, 5 years later, I was in a match. It was a live event. I believe it was Carlito or Chavo. And I went to see, and I go, hey, watch this. Watch my comeback. I'm going to try something. So it was like, jab, 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 transform the arm, cobra strike, turn around, schoolboy. And the audience immediately laughed at the arm strike. And I don't even know if it had a name at the time. Anyway, it quickly became the Cobra. And I remember I went to Raw, and Ricky Steamboat was my producer. And he's like, you're going to go over tonight. I think it was against Heath Slater. It was a Vince wants to see the Cobra. And I'm like, Vince knows about the Cobra? Because I only did it on live events. And it was getting good reviews. And the producers were, you know, writing down the audience is reacting. It's funny. I found out that it was the perfect finisher. You can do it at any time to any size person. And
that's true.
And then I saw another article recently how it's one of the most, statistically speaking, it's one of the most effective finishers of all time. One person kicked out of it without the sleeve, Sheamus.
Ooh, oh.
And one person kicked out of it with the sleeve, Daniel Bryan.
Mm.
So, I mean, and I've probably given 1,000 cobras?
And only two people have ever kicked out.
Yeah, that's 99%.
Wow. Yeah, that's a pretty good move.
0.98.
Do you think with the career that you had that you'd be a Hall of Famer? Or you will be?
People joke about it. JTG always says that. He's been calling me a Hall of Famer for a long time. I don't know. For example, I do have a specific genre.
For sure.
So as a comedic wrestler, I could say, yeah, I would see myself being in the Hall of Fame one day, but not now. I guess it kind of has to be more nostalgic, maybe down the road. But just as a general, you know, I wasn't never a heavyweight champion, and I didn't have WrestleMania singles matches and that kind of stuff. But for being a comedic wrestler, I could see it happening.
Do you think that, you know, the work that you did 10-ish years ago really opened the doors for, you know, there's a lot of comedic wrestlers now. You've got Joey Ryan does his thing. Orange Cassidy does his thing. Do you think that you kind of helped open the doors for those guys?
Yeah, a lot of them, though, they're not, like, they do funny stuff, but it's not quite, my comedy wrestling was like 80s sitcom wrestling. And that I grew up watching a lot of 80s TV. So Joey Ryan does something very funny, but backstage he's not an 80s comedy wrestler.
Maybe Colt Cabana. Yeah.
Colt Cabana is good. He's very good. He has an excellent sense of humor. And there are guys that are funny that are out there. Yeah, Orange Cassidy is entertaining as well. I've seen some of his stuff. It looks great. But I found that the majority of my comedy was from pre-tapes. The stuff I did in the ring was fine, but you have to wrestle. You can't, you know, avoid the wrestling to do comedy.
Sure.
So I had comedic wrestling, but the comedic wrestling was also from I think there was a whole year where we had a lot of guest general managers.
Yeah.
And I didn't wrestle on Raw for a year, but I was in every pre-tape every week. And then when I came back to wrestling, I was so much more over because they got to know me so much more from these pre-tapes. So I think some of the comedy kind of carried over to the matches, but I believe they got to know me comedically from the pre-tapes, yeah. I think.
Well, now your daughter's getting into wrestling.
Yeah, she's not comedy at all.
And she's a badass.
She's a heel, and she's very good. She was identified quite early when she was younger as being, you know, an excellent actress. She cut a promo when she was, God, how old was she? So that must have been 10 years old or 11 years old. She came down for a month in OVW, spend a month with me in the summer. And she wanted to do a promo on promo day. We had promo days. And Al Snow was like, okay. He kind of was impressed that this kid had the guts to want to get in the ring and do a promo in front of everybody. So promo day came and promo day went. And I kind of said to Al, I mean, she still wants to do it. And he's like, okay. He thought she was just, you know, saying that and wasn't going to end up doing it. But I had spoken to her earlier in the week and I said, I want you to do a heel promo. Mm. So at, God, was she 10 or 11? It was probably 11 years old. She gets in the ring and cuts this heel promo. And standing ovation at the end. It was almost like, you know, in the movies when someone cuts a promo and there's like silence for like 3 seconds.
Right.
And then everybody erupts. And that's what happened. So even when she'd come backstage at Raw, she'd get into the pre-tape room and she'd just get on the mic. I remember the Brooklyn Brawler coming out. Well, she's a star. She's going to be a star. And she's always been around it. And she's always been really good at it. And now she's learning And she understands the psychology really well, I guess from conversations and long car rides we've had growing up. But now she's just learning the physical side, getting her moves, you know, crisp. And once that's the final piece of the puzzle, she'll be a megastar, actually. She'll be one of the top female talent, I believe, in the WWE.
And what's her name so everyone can look out for her?
Yeah, Bianca is her real name, Bianca Corelli. And I think it's, I don't know, whether social media is Bianca Sophia.
We'll figure it out.
Bianca Sophia something. But yeah, you'll hear about her. She's it's undeniable.
Well, she just had a WWE tryout.
She had a tryout and she destroyed everybody on the mic and they just wanted her to tighten up her strikes, her moves, and you know, they're getting better every week. And that's it. Just a matter of time, really.
It's funny because the daughters and sons of wrestlers either dive right into it, follow after their parents' footsteps, or they want to go as far away from it as possible.
Absolutely.
You know, and there's really no in between. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, the psychological side, like she wants to know where I was and what was I doing when I wasn't home, because you're not home a lot.
Yeah.
And I mean, the plan was when I left to go be a professional wrestler, she was 8 years old, and I said, look, you are a star, and you need to be in Hollywood, but how do we get there?
Yeah.
Well, I know a way to get in. I don't know if it's the best way, but it's the only way I can see right now. I'm going to go become a wrestler, and I'm going to work for the WWE, and then WWE does WWE movies, and I'll get connections to Hollywood, and then when the time is right, I'll bring you in and all this stuff. So that was really our game plan.
Wow.
When she was a kid, and it's worked. You know, I did a movie, and I do television to this day. And just trying to keep those connections fresh so that when the time is right, she can come over and make a living for herself.
How old is she now?
Just turned 24.
Oh, so she's got all kinds of years in front of her.
Yeah, she finished university, and that's big.
Where'd she go?
She went to Western.
Yeah, that's my rival school. I went to Laurier.
Oh, no, yeah. Yeah, she went to Western, and she graduated, and I did the same. I went to Concordia, and I graduated. So I started wrestling late. I started wrestling at 28 years old.
Wow. Training. Wow.
So she's ahead of me already. And she knows that, you know, there's life before wrestling and there's life after wrestling, and we have to plan accordingly. Mm. And if you have a 6-year run, just say, and how are we going to parlay that, you know, fame, I guess you can call it, or that TV time into the next next chapter in your life. So we're realistic about what needs to be done.
Well, and you mentioned a little bit earlier, but people that don't live in Canada don't realize that you're on TV all the time. Like Sportsnet's like the equivalent of being on Fox Sports or something like that, or ESPN.
Yeah, it's national TV. Yeah. It's funny, when I got to the airport on Friday, we record Aftermath on Friday at noon, and it airs at like 6:30 now.
And it's just a wrestling show.
It's a talk show, yeah. It's a panel, four people.
Yeah. And Jimmy Corderas is on.
On it. Caroline Schved and this guy Nug Nargang. He's a a comedian, I guess.
Yeah.
And we talk wrestling. We talk WWE, NXT, SmackDown, Raw, pay per views, and it's a fun show. It's short. It's only half an hour. Every time we do it, we're like, man, we need an hour show.
Well, half an hour on TV is 20 minutes with three breaks. It's like it flies right by.
It's fast, and with four people. Dividing up the talking time, it's pretty fast. But I was walking through the airport, and it was playing in one of the bars, and so one guy immediately saw me and looked and was like, how are you here? You know,
magic how that happens.
Yeah, and that's why a lot of Canadians, they get to hear me speak about wrestling honestly and as myself. And you know, we try and keep it positive, obviously, but there's some stuff to complain about, but you have to complain about it in a constructive way.
I was actually like kind of blown away when I found out you were Canadian, because it took me many years to realize you were Canadian, and then I'm like, oh, and you're from like super close to where I'm from.
Yeah, even Chris Jericho, the first time I met him, he had been watching the product on television, and I can just see him shaking his head like, you know who it's like, Fez from the 70s show.
Yeah.
The first time you hear him speak, it's like, this is weird. So I guess that's kind of a similarity.
Well, also because so many of the Canadian wrestlers have had gimmicks where it's been like, I'm Canadian, you know, like Bret Hart's gimmicks like that.
Yeah.
And so many other gimmicks are like, I'm Canadian, and then it plays into their character. You were Canadian, but you were really, you know, playing this Italian character.
Yeah, that's actually one of the reasons why, like, I like to take Canadian indie bookings across Canada. And the reason is because I want to, and there's still people that don't know. Maybe they don't watch Aftermath or whatever it is. And it used to drive me. I'm really patriotic. I absolutely love being Canadian. And the fact that I couldn't say I was Canadian, it kind of bothered me a bit. So actually, there was a speech I made when I had my neck issues where they flared up for the third time. It was in the Rico Coliseum. And I had to say the speech in character, which I didn't want to do. I wanted to be honest with the Canadian audience.
Yeah.
And I just said, look, if this is it, we don't know yet. It ended up being it, but we didn't know at the time. I said, if this is it, the only regret I have is that I couldn't say to Canadians that I'm from Canada. And it was, again, it was an honor and a privilege to be an Italian character. Since becoming Santino, I have become a dual citizen. I have an Italian passport.
Wow.
I learned the language, and I really used it as an opportunity to get in touch with my Italian roots.
Yeah.
But the Canadian people didn't know I was Canadian, you know, and they do now. And I make a point to let people know that, you know, I'm one of you guys.
Yeah.
I like maple syrup too.
and beer and hockey.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course. Was there one certain move that led to the neck injury?
Back in university, I think I partially herniated a disc, and then that disc kind of calcified and became bone, and the bone was touching the spinal cord. So I was susceptible to stingers all the time.
Huh.
And I protected my neck as long as I could, man. I did traction. I would travel on the road with the device that I could hook up to a lat pull-down machine and just do traction to my neck and try to strengthen my neck and not to do stupid things like backflips where you land on your head, trying to land on your head, period. And I just try to hold on for as long as I could. And then it just reached that point where, I would have flare-ups. And then the flare-ups got more frequent until the point where it was stuck in a flare-up. And I remember I was getting ready for a match against Jack Swagger. And all of a sudden, I'm like, I had like a 1 centimeter window to move my neck. And otherwise, I was like, I just couldn't move my neck.
Wow.
And I remember I couldn't even get up off the bed. I'd have to roll to my stomach and push up because I couldn't lift my head forward. And I had a narrow spinal canal, and it's, you know, the disc was, the bone was touching. It was a bad situation, and I didn't really fully realize how bad it was till we had, you know, MRIs and looked at it, and they said, yeah, you need surgery, right?
Wow.
So we had a double cervical fusion. And I actually could have had a triple cervical fusion, which means they would have taken out 3 discs and put in 3 pieces of bone. But it was shin bone from a donor. And the shin bone, I guess, is a similar diameter to the disc.
Huh.
And they put it in. So we only did 2 levels, which means you have a chance to come back. If you have 3 levels, you can't come back. So the hope was that we can come back and wrestle. And you just never got well enough to come back.
But does it affect your judo or anything you're doing with the training?
I can't do neck bridges anymore.
Okay.
I can live with that. You know, I'm comfortable.
Okay.
And I do have another level that is bad, but I'm going to try and address that in 2020 with some stem cells.
Oh, okay. Well, I know that completely changes the game.
Yeah, if it works as well as I'm hoping, I'll try and come back a little bit for a couple of years and maybe try and win the big one.
Yeah.
Miracle moment.
Why not? The Milan Miracle.
Yeah, I've got to have one more miracle.
What's the advice that you give to your daughter as she's approaching this career?
You have to learn, and it's all my students as well, you have to fight what you're going to see. So I'm training you to wrestle a certain way, and then you're going to go in the Indies and you're going to see guys not doing it. Mm. And it's not because you're not supposed to, it's because they were improperly trained or they don't have the maturity to try and not do a million things. Like learn how to work, and don't just, you have to stand out. So if everyone's doing this, okay, so for example, let's say we're playing basketball and everyone shoots a basketball a certain way. That's probably the best way to shoot a basketball.
Yeah.
So you should learn to shoot that way.
Sure.
But in pro wrestling, you want to stand out. So if everyone's doing something one way, you got to learn to do it another way.
Mm.
And in most cases, the other way is the right way. Because there's a lot of, I don't know where the quality of wrestling became diluted, but it is, you know, all the holy shit chants and oh my God chants. And that's not what you're supposed to be aiming for. And people think it's good, but it's the reaction to the finish of the match. That's all you should really be aiming for.
Not the moments in the match.
No, the moments in the match are going to lead up to that thing. And you know, the analogies with sex, right? It's all about the big finish. and that's what determines whether or not that sex was good is the big finish.
A lot of people, myself included, say that, you know, this is the best time to be a wrestling fan. 2019, there's so many options.
There are, but I'm afraid that it may implode. Because it's everyone's a wrestler and there's a million companies and it's becoming less special.
Mm.
When there was 12 channels on the television and one was wrestling, that was big. Less is more.
Mm.
You know, you were on TV, you were known by the whole world. And now there's just so many wrestlers and so many companies and it's becoming a little less special.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe wrestling's very cyclical. You know this. Maybe this is just the cycle. Maybe we're at the high spot right now and maybe it'll go back down to, you know, a different time.
Yeah, and I mean, it's also, it's cyclical, but there's also different factors like the internet, social media,
right.
the ability for anybody to, what do you call it, when you live stream
sure.
any event
yeah.
with $500 of equipment.
Yeah.
Before you needed a big money backer. Yeah. To break into television was massive, but now you know the value of going viral.
Yeah.
is real. It's real, man. You can have a video with 8 million views, and Raw can't get 8 million views. So viral is legitimate.
Yeah.
So there's interesting factors. It's constantly adapting as well as being cyclical.
Right.
So it's interesting. I mean, it's fun. It's fun to watch it develop and evolve. Look at the women in wrestling, that is a positive evolution. The ability to not have to have that money backer, that's a positive thing too. Yeah. There's also positives and also negatives. The everyone giving their opinions, like it matters, that's kind of a negative.
Yeah. I want to be super respectful of your time. I know you have another booking you need to get to, but it's such a pleasure to speak with you.
Oh, thanks, man. The pleasure's all mine.
There you go, Santino Marella. Thanks for checking out this chat, and thank you for being you on this Thanksgiving Day as this interview is dropping. The interview was actually going to be like a lot longer, but we had a super short window because Santino was riding to another event that night with Vladimir Kozlov, and Kozlov was blowing up Santino's phone the whole interview with texts being like, hey, we're in the car waiting for you. Where are you? So as soon as the interview ended, he's like, I got to go like right now. Although we did take a photo, which you can see on my Instagram or Twitter, where we're both doing the Cobra. We took that as we were waiting for the elevator to go down because we had to go. We had to rush. But 30 minutes with Santino, man, I will take it. Such a great guy, a great interview, great Canadian. And how weird is it to hear him talking the whole time without an accent? Not even a hint of the Santino Marella accent. Let me know what you thought of this one. Tag me, tag Santino. He's at the Milan Miracle. Share this episode with your friends. Let them know what you thought of this one. Future Hall of Famer. I think so. Nobody does comedy wrestling quite like him. And you've got a lot of comedic gimmicks right now. We mentioned him in the interview, but you've got Colt Cabana, and you've got Orange Cassidy, you've got Joey Ryan, all kind of doing their own variations of this, but I don't know if anyone's done it like Santino Marella. And on the complete other end of the spectrum, when you have a minute, look up some of the footage of his daughter, Bianca, in the ring. Ooh, she is going to be an absolute killer in the ring. Whew. So as we wrap this thing up, once again, super thankful for you. It's that time of year. It's that time of year to be thankful. It's Thanksgiving, if you're listening to this in America. If you're listening to this anywhere else, be thankful as well. Be grateful for whatever's happening on this Thursday or whatever day you're listening. Here's the quote that's, this has been something that's resonated with me for a long, long time. Back when we used to have like AOL or MSN Messenger, ICQ. My fellow Canadians know all about ICQ and MSN Messenger. You would change like your info in your bio so you could like put a quote in there or like, oh, I have a crush on this girl or I'm really into this movie this week or whatever. You could change it all the time. And I had this talent in there I've already given away part of the quote here. I had this quote in there for the longest time. It's something that's spoken to me for a long time because it's so true. It's from Tim Notke. And it's hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. So chew on that for a little bit. Have a great day. If it is Thursday as you're listening to this, fill up on your turkey, fill up on your stuffing. Don't forget the pumpkin pie. We will see you next Thursday.